Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo here on GCN Live. I am Morgan Reynolds, your guest host today, substituting for Jim Fetzer, who ordinarily presides here during the middle 3 days of the week, while Kevin Barrett, Boy Wonder, is the host on Mondays and Fridays. Today, my special guest is Spooked, a man who resides somewhere in the United States and seems to want to preserve his anonymity for career reasons, I presume. If you're a 9/11 skeptic and researcher, exposing the sins of the government on 9/11 and related issues like the war on terror, or better named, the Global Domination Project, is not exactly a career enhancer. He is residing in the United States. His website says his interests include politics, 9/11, deep secrets, classical music, music composition, playing piano, basketball, baseball, gardening, and one of his favorite musicians is Glenn Gould. I looked that up. He was an accomplished Canadian pianist, and he likes Brahms, Bach. That's all above me. And Spooked, it's good to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks very much. It's a nice intro.
How are you today?
I'm doing good.
All right. It's a pleasure to meet you. I think we're going to have a good time and an informative couple of hours here. Excuse me. Now, let me start by saying, where were you on 9/11, and what did you think as this event unfolded?
Yeah, that's funny. I was actually kind of clueless about when it was happening. I drove into work, and I didn't know. I was listening to music, and I didn't. I had a tape on. I didn't have.
Let me interrupt, Spooked, and ask if Matt, the technician, can clear up the back talk. Can you hear that too, Spooked?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, let's hope Matt, can you clear up our audio problem here? Pac-Man Jones, following his six arrests. Okay, go ahead, Spooked. We're talking about what your thought process was on 9/11 itself.
Right. So, well, I just was kind of clueless until I got into work, and then everybody was all shocked. I didn't know what had happened, and then they kind of told me that the World Trade Center was attacked, and they collapsed, and people were trying to get on websites, and everything was all jammed up, and I went to my office and tried to go to websites and everything. I couldn't get access to websites, and it was just a mess, and then I heard the radio about these airplanes, and my immediate thought was that had something to do with Bush, but
really? Okay.
Yeah.
You were suspicious right away. Now did you have a background of being interested in skullduggery like this, or conspiracy, or
not really.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think 9/11 basically started it all off. I mean, I had some doubts about the JFK assassination, but, that's like most people. I don't know. So, and actually, 9/11, after, it was such a shock, and everybody, the whole country went into mourning. I didn't even process many thoughts about it. And I just couldn't get any news about, any alternative thoughts about it. And finally, after months of searching online, I found, like, Mike Rupert's site. And then he had, like, this timeline of warnings and stuff. And, that started piquing my interest. So I just started doing more and more research and just started building and building. So
that was from the wilderness, and that website was up pretty early, I gather, after 9/11.
Right, yeah. Actually, I found it for Cop BCIA. But,
You did what?
Oh, I just... He had this other alternative site called Cop VCIA, which that was sort of how I
see.
Climbed onto. It's a minor point. Anyway, but
Well, speaking of websites, I've got to plug yours during the show, which is covertoperations.blogspot.com. That's the principal website, isn't it?
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. That's on my homepage.
So, some months after 9/11, you started investigating.
Right.
And where did you go first in puzzling this out? What really piqued your interest? Of it?
Right. Eventually I found David Ray Griffin's book, New Pearl Harbor, and read that.
That takes us up to 2004, I believe. That came out maybe March or April, early 2004. And that was a year after the invasion of Iraq.
Right. Well, I didn't really get into this until after the Iraq invasion.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing a lot more reading online at that time and just found a lot more stuff out there. It was really hard right after 9/11 to find any alternative sites, at least for me, because I was kind of clueless about these things. And then in late 2004, I started my own site, and then I've been doing it almost 4 years now.
4 years. Well, that triggers the one of these big campaign questions, and that is, how do you think we're doing in terms of pushing this ball forward, both in terms of learning more about what did and did not happen, plus perhaps gaining some measure of justice, getting toward the real perpetrators?
Oh, gosh. first of all, we have such a diverse group of truth seekers, so it's...
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's sort of like an octopus. Everybody's going all sorts of different directions, and a lot of people don't trust each other. So there's a lot of problems within the so-called movement. And, I don't know. I try to stay out of that stuff as much as possible. Everybody has their own ideas about who's good and who's bad. And, I try not to ostracize anybody. I take the useful information I can from everybody. As far as getting closer to the truth, I think, there's progress, but it's slow. I think actually the last year it's not moved much. I think a year ago it seemed like there was a lot more interest in the news, like there are a lot more news articles and a lot more general interest, and I think it's kind of fallen down. I think maybe sort of peaked for some reason.
Yeah, well, let's see. We in 2006 we had the fifth anniversary. Then there was a flurry of even quasi or mainstream things. And then the sixth anniversary, less so, far less so.
Right, right, definitely. Yeah, well, so I don't know. I'm not real optimistic. I mean, I've never been real keen on having a new investigation, official investigation, because I just don't think that they're going to really get to the truth. Over the years, I've developed a pretty extreme view of things, so... Most people don't even like what I have to say anyway.
Oh, I want to hear that. Yeah. we're going to give our listeners on the Dynamic Duo some extreme views. We've got to. So on the other side of the break, that Morgan Reynolds, we return with a conversation with Spooked. And today my special guest is Spooked, and I've been aware of his work. He's one of the, I'd say, at this point, one of the leading no-plane analysts on the 9/11 event. And Spooked, before we left for the break, you gave us this tantalizing lead that you have some extreme views, and hey, I think most of the people in the 9/11 area are have some. We've all gotten, I think, more extreme over the last 4 or 5 years in our view of the world. So give me an extreme view.
Well, I should point out that I used to be linked on 9/11 blogger, and then they took my blog down like over a year ago. They decided they didn't like what I had, so...
Are they still in business? Right. I mean, they were very un-American, weren't they? They're censoring this, censoring that.
Yeah. I mean, everybody censors to some extent, I think. But for most people, I know I've had to censor some things on my site, unfortunately. But,
well, what, because of intemperate personal attack type thing,
right.
Language?
Right, just people being ridiculous, just not mm-hmm. staying on point and having mounting personal attacks generally. I have a scientific background, so I don't mind any sort of constructive criticism or argument, logical argument, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's just ridiculous name-calling. But anyway, I mean, as far as extreme views, I guess, you know, I'm a... You could call me a nuke no-planer. There's probably not too many of those, but basically...
That's a pretty unique class.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the plane issue.
Uh-huh.
That you insist that they faked the planes. Now, is it your contention that they did at all four sites on 9/11?
The
Pentagon is pretty well a consensus view that no plane went in there.
Right. Yeah. Well. Right. I mean, I think they did all four places the same way, and yeah, I think the best hypothesis is that is all fake plane crashes.
Now, why did they? Why would perpetrators do that? Now, first of all, of course, they want this war on terror, i.e., the Arab world or the Muslim world. Where, gee whiz, a lot of oil and transport land is, and energy must play a role in their motives. But would mean they need some Arab attackers, right? Or the belief that the Arab world attacked us.
Right. Well, are you asking in terms of how they went about designing it? I think, you know, the war on terror was probably planned a long time ago, and I think oil is only a very small part of it. I think more, probably importantly, is it designed to just increase military spending and to take away civil liberties, increase spying on citizens.
Military spending, of course, means Halliburton and lots of other financial entities.
Right.
Under Bush, so far, there's been a $4 trillion increase in federal government debt.
Right.
And kinds of middlemen, Wall Streeters, investment bankers, et cetera, take a rake off that.
Right. Well, I think this is the one problem that 9/11 people have right now is there's everything's going to shit. And if I said a bad word, but
believe.
But you know, I think everything's going to hell, and everybody's confused about what's going on. No one knows who's in charge and what it all means. And you know, 9/11 is just sort of a small part of it.
The financial uncertainties, the feeling
right.
that we're in a crisis,
right.
that the old firmament is giving way?
Right, the economic uncertainties, you know, oil. Whoa. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I had some feedback. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Okay. excuse me, so...
People are nervous, yes.
Right, basically. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty, economic uncertainty about food, oil, you know, housing, and
paper
and,
money.
We don't know if
gold.
We're going to war with Iran or, you know, what's going on.
So
I think a lot of people are distracted by a lot of different things, and a lot of people just don't want to deal with 9/11 at all. I mean, even if you present.
I don't believe, I agree, quite agree with you that the 9/11 is a small part of it. If we were to break 9/11 wide open, we'd have a constitutional crisis. Don't you believe it's gnawing at the gut of America that a lot of people turn away from it. They don't want the issue raised because they don't want to open that door. They don't want to look in there because they're afraid of what they'd find.
Right. Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Right.
Okay.
No, I just meant a small part of what people are getting, most people are getting bombarded with every, you know, in the news. It's just only a small part of what most people are thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's a very root cause for what everything that's going on. But, and yeah, certainly if we could blow it open, well, I think it has been blown open. I mean, it's pretty clear what they did. I think if you really look at the evidence, it's just people don't want to accept the evidence. They don't want to believe that it was that bad, and I think it was that bad.
Reading a column the other day by a Miami Herald columnist, and he was lamenting the decline of newspapers.
Right.
And he never mentioned the whole problem of the newspapers are such a censored, narrow, mainstream establishment, you know, respectable
right.
media.
Right.
And the young people know best, but
right.
a lot of us know that if you really want to find out the truth about something that's controversial, you go out and look on the web, on the internet, and
right.
if it is known anywhere, you can probably find it. But you wouldn't look in newspapers, would you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right.
And this guy never mentioned that as a factor in the decline of newspapers. I even subscribe myself to Newsweek. Today, my special guest is Spooked. A man whose website has made the argument that no planes crashed at any of the four sites named on 9/11. And his website is covertoperations.blogspot.com. And Spook, what are the, to go over your view of the claim that the planes were faked, what are the leading pieces of evidence that you and others have uncovered that impress you especially, that say, hey, there were no real airliners crashed at these four sites?
Right. Well, I think there's two things. One is the physics is all wrong for the crash sites, and there's just lack of debris at all four sites. It's a little more difficult to see, of course, at the trade towers, but that there was little debris, but that certainly the physics is wrong for how they crashed.
That business about the physics, that was the one thing, well, when I was in Washington, D.C., when this event happened, and I was one of the bureaucrats flushed out of the Department of Labor there on that morning, and I got to this new apartment. I just arrived at the week before. I had no television, so I wasn't influenced by the TV coverage that morning. But the one thing that I puzzled about was, could really aluminum planes, the way I put it today, is disappear into a steel tower? I didn't know about the concrete then, but it just seemed pretty amazing. And then I look around and say, well, gee, nobody else is questioning this. Engineers or physicists, some physical scientists. So I just pushed it aside at the time.
Right. Yeah, totally. I have thought about this over and over for a couple of years now, ever since I first encountered the idea that there that they faked the crashes, and I just still have a hard time wrapping my mind around the. But I mean, the physics is clearly wrong.
By the physics you're referring to the kind of the basic physics of Sir Isaac Newton, right? The fundamental laws of physics.
Well, just the holes that these things made, and then how they completely disappeared after making a hole of themselves, a silhouette of themselves.
The way crashes happen.
Right. Well, a huge thing is the missing tails. I mean, we're talking four massive jetliners, all of which had 20 to 30 foot tails, and they completely disappeared.
Well, they're at least 30 feet high, I think. Well,
right.
They're in that order of magnitude.
Well, depending on a 757 or 767, but they completely disappeared. And in case of the planes hitting the towers, I mean, they should have broken off.
Absolutely. Retired pilot John Lear makes a big point about that. They have a lot of, the tails have a lot of structural integrity on their own, but they can't stay attached to the fuselage spars very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of integrity. They put the flight data recorder back there, of course. The tail has a lot of survivability on its own.
Right.
And then there's this whole issue is you're not going to hit flush, you know, perpendicular. You're going to be at a bit of an angle.
Right.
And one engine or the other, one wing or the other is going to get hit first. It's going to spin that plane, rotate it, and that tail is going to get flung off. That's most obvious in the Pentagon, where they claim it went in at about a 45-degree angle.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, these tails are really gigantic, and where are they?
Right. Yeah, for the Pentagon, I remember I found some quote from some congressperson at the time who said military officials took them to a secret place and showed them part of the tail of the plane, but you know, we've never seen a picture of it. So I don't know. And you know, there's all these reports, different rumors that the tail flipped over the first ring, the outer ring, and went inside, and someone found it over there. But you know, there's just never been any solid story. Same thing with Flight 93.
Well, there's no real evidence. It's just the word of somebody or other.
Right. Basically, internet rumors, which you know, I imagine or disinfo, and just like Flight 93, there were rumors about people finding parts of tail, but we've never seen any picture of it. And you know, it's a massive thing, and there's this weird little imprint in the ground of the Flight 93 crater where the tail apparently something hit that looks like a tail. The tail just bounced away and disappeared.
Well, I'm not sure any hit, but there looks like they blew up some trash there, 20 feet by 10 feet wide. The hole is, talk about undersized.
Right.
To swallow a 757.
Yeah, the Flight 93 hole is the most bizarre thing. I think, you know, very few people look at 9/11 even seen that hole, I think. I mean, everybody concentrates on Manhattan, of course, but the Flight 93 crash crater is just bizarre. Just this plane-shaped hole.
Right, I mean, what are the perps? Regardless of what the perps were doing, it's amazing that the media don't make any noise about this. Maybe it's not amazing, given what we know, but the media at least have a false flag exterior that says we're independent, we're challenging, we know governments and politicians lie, but they completely shirked their duty on 9/11, didn't they? Well, it's even worse than that, but isn't it maddening that they don't raise any of these questions?
Yeah, I had a small email exchange with the editor of my local paper, and he just didn't want to deal with it. You know, he's like, well, if you find any evidence, we'll take a look at it, but we haven't seen anything convincing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, they don't want to deal. I don't exactly understand. I mean, you know, there's probably CIA infiltrated throughout the media, so I don't know who you're talking to exactly, but either they're controlled or they're scared. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's mostly self-censorship because of fear, don't you? I mean, it's almost a self-fulfilling system here where, yeah, they don't need people on the payroll here, there, and everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You just keep the people, compared to the constitutional republic we started as, where we were far more decentralized, we've become so monolithic and concentrated, and you've got top-down control is more easily exerted in this kind of system. It's really, really sad, and we need a constitutional crisis. This is Morgan Reynolds, your host on Dynamic Duo. We'll be back after the break with Spooked. Special guest today is Spooked, whose website is covertoperations.blogspot.com. And on the line, we have Jeff from Florida with a question or comment. And Jeff, welcome to the Dynamic Duo.
Welcome, Morgan. I just have a comment. I'm actually a physics professor, and I just want to give my two cents for about a minute as to why I think there are holes in the plane stories.
Okay, great.
It's wrong on so many grounds, and sparked my interest in this, I guess. For one thing, any time a force is applied to an object, it decelerates. That's Newton's second law.
Mm-hmm.
These planes, I don't see any deceleration.
And now you're referring to the videos where you're looking at, and you don't see any. Yes.
So to me, that looks like a faked video, like a, what do they call it, CGI, computer graphic, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Insert.
Yeah. The shape of the holes look completely wrong to me. They look like a cartoon cutout. And I've had experience in physics labs doing these experiments with Newton's second law and things of that nature. And this is clearly a cartoon.
Yeah. So does this involve colliding objects, some of these experiments you're doing?
Yes,
or?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're in physics, there are a variety of types of collisions, and this would be considered a small mass object hitting a large mass object, you know, and there are certain things that would occur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
do you see your... These basic, you know, they have these accident investigators, these crash. I'm thinking more about motor vehicles now. To your knowledge, do they use reliable physics in their analysis? Of course, you in a legal suit, you'd have competing experts, perhaps. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I think that they do. They do take things into account, but the problem is as you say, the competing experts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that any commission to do anything is going to get 10 experts on their side and 8 experts on the other side, and you're never going to get anywhere. Because they're going to rig it that way to where they, you know, where these people are bought off, or if they're not bought off, they're going to be...
I wish they would be that honest or fair-minded, where at least the other side... had a chance to make its case. I have a case in federal court where at least if we survive the defendant's motions to dismiss, we would have, I do like legal proceedings and the rules about against perjury and fake evidence and the chain of custody and so on, authenticity. There's lots of good things, but a commission is a political body, of course.
Yeah. Well, I'm enjoying your program. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Jeff, physics professor from Florida. Spooked, what did you make of his Jeff's remarks?
Well, it's great to hear. There's a guy online who always says, oh, why don't you go ask a high school physics teacher about the plane crashes and see how, what he thinks. And here we have a professor.
Well, hopefully Jeff was being honest. He says he is a physics professor, and he's giving us exactly what your analysis and mine, and among others, has maintained. That there is no deceleration, and the cartoon cutouts, these silhouette airplane-shaped silhouettes of passage are absurd. They're Wile E. Coyote.
Well, the wingtips.
And those wingtips can't survive this kind of collision.
Yes. Right. I think if forced to testify under oath, a lot of experts would say they looked fake. I mean, it looks wrong. It's just... they're afraid to speak out for their career. It's just unfortunate, like I am. I mean, just I don't really want to jeopardize any my situation. So,
right. Like I said at the outset, being on the wrong side of 9/11 is not a career enhancer in this country.
Exactly.
And one of the sad things is that especially people in the physical sciences and engineering are so dependent on government incentives and constraints and part, you know, big science and the whole the nature of universities, and it's very lamentable.
Yes.
It's too concentrated, you know. We need we basically need independent, diverse sources of funding and diversity in ideas and et cetera. Yeah.
Right.
I can remember, I've told this story a dozen times at least, but when I was still active on the faculty at Texas A&M University, we had a debate between Milton Friedman and Paul Samuelson. It was a big, nice event, and during the question and answer period, somebody asked Milton Friedman about the National Science Foundation, and the short of his answer was, "I'm against it." So, basically because of the concentrated power of funding and prestige that's embodied in the NSF.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's really hard if you've worked your way up through the ranks to, I mean, if you're trying to get up there, you don't want to speak out. If you're at the top, you don't want to ruin your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a no-win situation, unfortunately.
You know, one of the probably the most used argument against the case that 9/11 is an inside job is that the numbers are too large to be a successful conspiracy, right? Somebody would rat it out.
Right.
And yet, after the fact, the cover-up involves, I haven't counted, but it involves millions. It's a conspiracy of silence, and it's a self-reinforcing mechanism driven very heavily, as you point out, by these economic and career incentives.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, people like at NIST, you know, who wrote the report on the World Trade Center so-called collapse. I mean, you know, you got to imagine what kind of pressure they were under to conform to the official story.
Because... now, first of all, they are part of the U.S. Department of Commerce.
Right.
And that's a cabinet-level agency with a political appointee. Back then, it was Don Evans, who was a Texas good old boy buddy of the president. In fact, he was at the second inauguration, he was the secret location guy to succeed the president in the event of everybody else dying at the inauguration, you know.
Sure.
And I was in the U.S. Department of Labor, so I know how this works in the executive branch. And there's a political appointees in every subunit of a cabinet-level department like that.
Right. Well,
and there are careerists. There are honest, you know, technical and bureaucratic people, but they have to bend with the prevailing political winds to some extent or another. you know, consistent, compliant with regulation and law. You know, there's two types of people, the political appointees,
right,
like I was, and the careerists. And, the careerists have to keep, you know, salute and basically do what the politicos want. They can have feedback. But NIST is a political creature. And then they go out and hire, how many people? I don't know. It was 200 maybe contractors to perform the other work. So there's a wide network of people who get contracts by telling the government what it wants to hear. We will be back on the other side of the break with Spooked and more interesting conversation around 9/11. And today I'm talking with Spooked, whose website is covertoperations.blogspot.com. And Spooked, I noticed over the news that they mentioned the Minnesota governor, and on your website you raised some questions about the collapse of the bridge, that I-35 bridge in Minneapolis.
Right.
Yeah, and what's your thinking about that?
Oh, I haven't thought about that for a while, but it was a little fishy.
To me, you know, to have these support points fail simultaneously is the thing that is most disturbing.
I saw one security camera video where the one whole section just dropped down all at once, and I know, you know, there are witness reports of a bang. Who knows what to make of that? I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time looking at that. I mean, what was funny is that some of the people tried to blame it on bird guano building up on the girders and wearing away the steel.
I guess you could find somebody saying almost anything, right?
Well, this was like an official explanation.
Really? Okay. Now that's pretty bad. Well, let me go back, spend a few more minutes on this plane fakery issue, and ask you for your comment on, to me it's a psychology type analysis, but while the belief or the acceptance that they really faked us out by faking planes seems to me growing. In other words, our side is winning the day. The truth will out. But you see such resistance among seemingly intelligent people who have actually looked at this and are engaged in debate. Like there's a little email list that you're on and I am on, it seems. And you know, some of the you'd mentioned one of the emailers is Anthony Lawson, who's especially resistant and doesn't seem to me to offer much in the way of evidence or physical principles. And we were our side was just reinforced here by that call from Jeff, who's says he's a physics prof and has expertise in this. And so my question is, why is there such resistance? Is this blind spots, denial, NSA money, or what's going on here? All of the above and more.
Hello?
Spooked. You there?
Yes.
Did you hear my question?
Yes. I dropped the phone for a second.
Oh, okay. By the way, this is very good audio. That your cell phone must be a late model device.
Oh, yeah, it's oldish. But,
really, it's good though.
Okay.
So why is you really get some very strange kinds of resistance making the case that these large planes crashed and the physics makes sense and all the evidence, the data lines up on behalf of the real big planes did crash as more or less advertised?
Right. Well, I think it's a perfect example of the so-called big lie technique, where government puts out a giant lie, and it's so massive that idea that there really were no planes that crashed, and people just can't accept it. They can't believe that their government can put together such a big lie. And I think that's a big part of the psychology. And then if there's enough supporting evidence put out for planes, as there has been, then people will cling to that, even though the other parts don't make sense.
Now, sometimes the other side does make it explicit that they are they're worried about the politics rather than the real truth. They'll say, well, with this kooky idea that there were no planes crashed in the World Trade Center, that discredits the 9/11 truth movement, makes it harder to sell it to Jane Q. Public, and so therefore you're out to with disinfo to promote this kooky view and discredit us.
Right. Well, I know. Yeah, I mean, you should know from your own experience. You went on Fox News and actually mentioned no planes, and I think a lot of people were upset with you about that.
You're right. One of the consequences was that Key Dudney in Canada, he expelled me. He exiled me from the Physics 9/11 group.
Right.
You know, he made a mistake by making a statement in an email, which I put up on my website. The statement, namely, was, even if it were true that there were no planes and no airliners crashing at the World Trade Center, I wouldn't state it in public. You know, I would distort the truth.
I guess
somebody with different values than I have.
Right. I mean, what can you say? I mean, I guess I can't complain too much since I go anonymously. I guess everybody's afraid about speaking out in some way, but at least you should have some intellectual honesty. I try to be intellectually honest.
Yeah.
I'm open to all possibilities. So.
Well, let's go from the plane controversy to your position on what destroyed the World Trade Center towers. At least, I don't know about the other World Trade Center buildings, but it's your position, as I understand it, that mini nukes best account for the data there.
Right. I mean, I think that's the best hypothesis right now. I think the evidence really supports that. And, I followed G.D. Wood's Dew theory for quite a while, but it didn't quite...
Which is, Dew means directed energy weapon. Yeah.
Right. And it didn't quite hang together for me, and just partly because the technology was completely... There was no technology that was could explain it, no coherent technology, and I think... Well, it's actually somebody who wrote into me from reading my site, someone who actually posts quite a bit on my site now called The Anonymous Physicist, who wrote in and said that nukes explain the whole thing much better, and I have to agree. I mean, basically, the one thing that the nukes really explain are the heat and the rubble that persisted for weeks and weeks. And his idea is that there were fizzled nuclear reactions going on that were generating the heat in the rubble. And I know
my question would be, what evidence is there for this persistent heat? People were walking in their work shoes across the site, right?
So
I have a quote from one of the guys where he was complaining about how rotting out his shoes were, that you were sloshing around in water. They kept pouring water on everything. I believe we are being ushered off stage for the break, And today I am speaking with my special guest, Spooked, a man who resides somewhere in the United States. And he is a 9/11 skeptic and researcher, wishes to remain anonymous, and I respect that. And his website is covertoperations.blogspot.com, and I recommend it. And Spooked, we were talking about what technology did or did not reduce most of the World Trade Center to rubble on 9/11. We agree that the official story is preposterous and provably wrong, that airplane crashes, subsequent fires brought these buildings to woe, but we don't seem to agree on the nuke versus the the directed energy weapon debate. And one of my questions is, what do we know, what do you know about mini nukes? I mean, supposedly the military has these smallish type nuclear explosive devices, I guess, some kind of, you know, tactical battlefield, smaller stuff, right?
Right.
But what do we really know about that technology?
What do I know about it?
Yeah, or the collective we, either version, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, there are videos on YouTube of like the so-called Davy Crockett rifle. I think it's on Wikipedia too. A small tactical nuke you could shoot from a rifle.
What kind of recoil was that?
Yeah. Right. And apparently
round, you know. Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently they stopped using it because it couldn't fire far enough to get away from the fallout, so the soldiers got exposed to the radiation. But
aren't these things supposed to be clean bombs relative to regarding radiation compared to the old style nuclear devices? And I guess, are these supposed to be fission or fusion?
The bottom line is I don't know. initially, because there was tritium, there definitely was tritium, well, according to a paper anyway, which has government scientists on it, but there almost certainly was some tritium, significant amounts of tritium above than what they expected. They found it at ground zero, and tritium would be a signature for fusion. So there was some speculation that there was fusion devices, advanced fusion bombs used. But more recently, we've been thinking that it was small fission devices, and that would account for the fizzling leftover fragments that were generating the heat in certain spots of the rubble, the ground zero rubble. One thing for sure is
that was from that geologic based survey. Because Dr. Judy Wood has at least some of that data on her website. These were from satellites, right? Satellite measurement devices. They weren't there. Hot spots, as I recall. I haven't looked at that issue lately. But here's let me give you the other side of this, my problem is that a lot of the phenomena to be accounted for don't seem consistent with mini nukes, that takes the form of, for example, there wasn't any serious damage to the bathtub, so they didn't flood lower Manhattan, or, you know, the rail lines, the basement, the mall. The seismic impact was pretty minimal. You know, you got these 2.7 and 2.3 readings, whereas if you had nuclear bombs going off, you'd think you could run up those Richter readings. And then the upper 80% plus of these towers turned to fine dust instead of maybe some wider range of size of particles and solids. And then the way each tower unravels is like a layered disintegration from the top down. It wasn't a bottom-up phenom as it appears that the Building 7 was. And then we got these peculiar vertical holes in the Buildings 5 and 6 and in Liberty Street and so on. Weird stuff that wouldn't seem a series of mini nukes could account for. And then there's the issue of, there weren't reports of really intense heat. There weren't any crispy human bodies. All that unburned paper. We got these peculiar flip cars. And, of course, I, along with Dr. Judy Wood, do not believe in the molten metal stories, you know, weeks later. And then there was this selectivity, it seemed, about the aluminum cladding versus the steel beams, where there was a lot of aluminum cladding flung about on nearby buildings in the streets, but not much in the... There were some steel beams, but not many. It seemed like most of the steel was dissociated into small pieces and being carried away in the atmosphere, settling out later here, there, and everywhere. And then another peculiarity was that, I don't know if you looked at the World Trade Center Building 4, the north wing survived, but the main part of Building 4 virtually disappeared, and it's almost like a linear cut that is left as the southern line on this north wing. It's really, I could imagine an energy weapon doing that, but not a kind of a radial explosive devices like the nukes. And then there's, but you get the point. There's, I don't know if the nukes cover these things.
I could make an argument to that nukes could, but
Well, you're going to get a segment of 10 minutes, so but not right now. Looks like
okay.
We're going to break.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Morgan Reynolds on the Dynamic Duo. We're interviewing Spook of covertoperations.blogspot.com, and we'll see you on the other side of the break. Today my special guest is Spooked, and he wishes to remain anonymous, and I think he's an important researcher on the 9/11 issue, and his website is covertoperations.blogspot.com. Why not plug the Reynolds website while I'm at it, nomoregames.net. And Spooked, we're having a little exploration of what kind of technology was used on 9/11 to disappear the World Trade Center towers. Now, Spooked, do you agree that there was remarkable paucity of rubble? There just wasn't this. It wasn't enough debris for what each tower was reportedly weighed some 500,000 tons. It wasn't enough debris, was there?
Right. I totally agree that there seemed to be a lot of missing rubble.
They were
a lot of missing steel,
you know, with outcroppings of remaining parts of these buildings, like the Marriott and then some of these... lower outer perimeter columns from each tower, but it was incredible, and it wasn't down in the basements either. At least we have strong evidence to that effect. It just wasn't enough. So, whatever kind of destructive weaponry or technology was used, it didn't leave much at the World Trade Center itself. And
right.
Spooked believes that it was likely, or it's his favorite hypothesis is that it was many nukes. And on the other side of the ledger, we have Dr. Judy Wood, who believes it was done by some kind of a directed energy weapon, unconventional weaponry. And are you near a computer, Spook, by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. here's what I'd like to do. Well, first of all, let me make the argument in the abstract, and then we could watch a few seconds of a video together. But one of the things that strikes me is these buildings unraveled from top down, didn't they?
Right.
And it was almost like floor by floor. You can't really see that, but it's like the whole thing disintegrating turned to fine dust from the top. And that's what I can't see. Right. Is this what a mini nuke or series of mini nukes would do? Well, if you can go to Dr. Judy Wood's website, we can go to this YouTube I want to look at. You know, one of these videos of the it's the North Tower in this case coming apart,
okay,
unraveling. If you go to drjudywood.com.
Yeah.
And you go down, let's see, we'll go down 10% of it or something. She's got this news section beneath all these mini pictures. News.
Okay.
Are you there? And then she's got a pink banner which says related links. And it's got covertoperations.blogspot.com. See that? It's got three links listed. And I want to go to the second one, which is 9/11 controlled demolition, clearly visible.
Right.
Okay, well, let's go there and see if you can get this YouTube to run, which is 9/11 controlled demolition, clearly visible. I don't know who the photographer or, you know, chain of custody or anything, but and then it has in paren, rare evidence. Mine's still loading.
Yeah, I got the video going.
This will be one of these. There's got to be dozens of them out here about showing the towers. Let's see. Mine's not ready to run. It's giving me a hard time here.
Which part?
How about you? What stage are you at? It says the total time on this thing is 4:48. We only need a few seconds here at the beginning.
Okay. I mean, I'm already 1 minute into it. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I need to back this thing up here. Okay, there it is. There it is. Okay. Maybe we can start at the beginning again there, Spooked.
Okay.
And it says, another collapse analysis. Look at that building go. It's turning to dust. It's just incredible. And now all these streamers, you can see a lot of this, what appears to be the aluminum cladding. Look at that thing. And then there's the so-called spire, one of these core columns or a couple of them that won't give up.
Right.
And the way this thing, and of course it, people argue about whether it's 10 seconds, 12, or whatever, but the way this building, with so much structural steel and then a lot of concrete and many other materials, but the way this thing comes apart is just incredible, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And so when you look at this, you're saying, well, I think, there would be a series of these mini nukes somehow making all this go?
Right. Well, I mean, they could have conventional explosives in there too, like, I don't really know how they did it by any means.
I mean, I would be bothered, you know, I like the KISS. This thing is such a complex operation. So many moving parts on this morning of 9/11. You know, I'd want to, where I could, practice the keep it simple.
Well, yeah, but in some videos, you can actually see corner demolitions jutting out. I mean, you can see there's explosions, but if you ignore the dust streaming out, there's explosions ahead
of
the collapse.
Oh, yeah, below the unraveling in total, right?
Yeah, right.
Now,
I mean,
that could be... the question is, they're there, and I don't believe it's video fakery. But the question is, what's causing that, right?
Now, I'm not even talking about squibs.
Okay.
Some of the squibs. I'm talking about, like, there's some corner shots I've seen where you can just see these explosions jet out and going mm-hmm. down in sequence. And I think, basically it looks like they sort of liquefied the center of the building and with internal explosives, and then the whole thing just unraveled. And they did it from top to bottom. I mean, there's no reason they couldn't do nukes from top to bottom. And I mean, I'm not one of those who believes that it was all in the basement. I think they definitely had stuff on top.
Right. Yeah, this video, it just puts that in the shade. Yeah, it can't be, because it was a top-down thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, there's so many ways we can go, but one of my thoughts is, what about all these very odd vertical holes?
Oh,
a nuke couldn't have done that, could it? You know, these 24-foot in diameter, more or less, cylindrical holes, you know, that's really weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, actually, when I've looked at those in more detail, looking at other angles, they're not really perfectly round holes. And
no, they aren't, no.
And I think they're, usually you can find, like, huge columns that have fallen in to cause that. So I think it's basically just the pieces of steel that go
Today, my special guest is Spooked, and we're going to wrap up our interview with Spooked, and we were discussing the technology that destroyed the World Trade Center, Spooked favoring mini nukes as the winning hypothesis, and yours truly favoring the directed energy weapons. But before we go back to the details here, Spooked, a viewer might ask, or your host might ask, what does it matter? Well, it matters at one level, and that is the more we know, all else equal, the better. We want the truth. But in both cases, wouldn't this point directly to the military-industrial complex rather than other possible perpetrators? Both would say, gee, only the military-industrial complex here in the U.S. could do this. Or could there somebody else be culpable?
Well, I agree. I think the way it was carried out can only have been somebody very powerful, not just... I mean, actually, the nukes hypothesis has been criticized by some because they say, well, it's a hangout saying that Al-Qaeda had many nukes that they planted in the towers. But, I mean, there's no way that they could have put them in that kind of sequence that could have demolished the towers the way that was seen.
Okay, so, it would take access by your thesis, right? I mean,
well, not only that,
access,
but just
right.
so much massive amount of many devices to do the pattern.
Yeah, so, these would be internally placed. That'd be the only way the mini which is a disadvantage compared to some external platform for a for directed energy. But okay, but in any case, it almost certainly would point to the military-industrial complex. That doesn't mean foreigners couldn't be involved, right, or outside contractors, surely. But
I think the aftermath is important. I mean, I think it is important for people who live in New York City, if there's radiation that they need to know about. We know that the EPA lied about the dust. Very, you know, there's a huge cover-up about that, so we don't really know what all they're covering up. And,
were these people ingested for days and months, and the fatality rate keeps rising, doesn't it?
There were a lot of cancers from there's over 400 cancers from Ground Zero workers, so... And it's not clear that all of that is coming from the dust. So I would argue that some of that's from lingering from radiation exposure.
Okay, well, let's go back to some of these arguable details, if you will. One of them was this business about corner shots and squibs. And the directed energy weapon thesis would say, well, there's pressurized tanks, and if the tanks start to dissolve, boom, you get these sudden release of gases. And I know that these firefighters had these, what are they called, Scott packs that were blowing up on them at the during the event here, the destruction of the World Trade Center. So, at any rate, there's an alternative to the internal.
Well, we're seeing huge explosions coming out. And, you know, there's like a video I've seen of the South Tower go down where there's like a huge piece of material getting ejected out. I mean, it's not just some tank. I don't even know how many, I don't think there could be enough tanks to account for that. I mean, as far as directed energy weapons, you could say induce some sort of explosive type reaction. The major problem I have with the directed energy weapons is there's just no evidence that the technology exists.
Although you admit you're not exactly a mini nukes expert too, because this would take, if I just look at how the buildings, the two towers unravel,
okay.
I just can't get comfortable with this idea that, there's multiple nuclear devices somehow, I guess wirelessly, taking this building in to find us from top to bottom in this kind of layered sequence. The way this thing goes is just it's remarkable how it does. Unravel,
well, if you believe Bill Deagle, they used nukes at the Oklahoma City building to tear off that side of the building. They had many nukes planted there according to Bill Deagle.
Well, but yeah, well, even that I find, and here I'm not the physical scientist that can really, but my question here as a lay person on these explosive things is, that Oklahoma City Murrah building is basically like the front half of the building was mostly had disappeared. I don't know about, I haven't counted the rubble to see if there's enough. I suspect there isn't. And the thing is kind of cut in half, if you will, right? It's pretty linear. And
right.
Yet I think of these nukes as being radial, right? They just go in all directions here. With more
you could have a
pop or power, energy release.
Yeah,
me,
well,
if,
whether...
If they were
I mean,
in
you
the
could
building,
argue that they're shaped charges of some sort, and I'm... I'm not an explosive expert, but I mean, certainly we can both agree that it looks like the buildings were blown up. Whatever.
Oh yeah, certainly. And it wasn't Anfo,
right?
And Timothy McVeigh, right?
Right.
He was a dupe, but I don't doubt he was involved, but.
Right.
He wasn't the mastermind explosives expert in pulling this off with Terry Nichols, and that's it. End of story. Something rotten there.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole nother story. But,
Now, the vertical holes issue, you're going to... Now, where were the crispy bodies? I mean, these nukes are going to release intense heat, and then you have all this, it's very peculiar to have all this unburned office paper all over the place next to burning cars. And then the burning cars are so peculiar. They're flip cars, they're delaminated looks, the gas tanks.
There's
really weird stuff going on.
Right. Well, there's definitely some anomalies and I mean, I think the cars can be explained by EMPs,
magnetic pulses.
The
cars
that could have been generated. Right. I mean, that would heat up the steel in one part of the car and burn off the paint. I think that's a good explanation for some of the strange car damage. And EMPs are a product of nuclear devices. The holes, I think,
1,400 of them were towed off that were totaled you know, cars.
Right. Well, some of them could have just, right. Unfortunately, we're missing so much evidence that we're not being shown that it's hard to rule things out. What I will say about the bodies is there were over 1,000 bodies that were unaccounted for in the towers.
In round numbers, 1,000 without any remains whatever ever discovered.
So, I mean, you could say they're vaporized or whatever. I think certainly nuclear energy can
vaporize. There are no toilets remaining either.
Right, exactly.
Where are the ceramic toilets?
Exactly.
And the computers and the steel case cabinets and so on and so forth. Hey, it was great for you to come on the show today, Spooked. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you very much.
And let us continue to research and learn and hopefully get justice down the road.
Definitely.
Thank you for your participation, Spooked. This is Morgan Reynolds bidding adieu for the Dynamic Duo. I will be guest host tomorrow as well, so tune in.